sponsored in part by Eli Lilly and Company. Do you think you might have migraine? Talk to your healthcare professional about your symptoms, the number of days they impact your life, and which treatment options might be best for you. Learn more at thinkmigraine.com. And the American Brain Foundation. For over 30 years, the foundation has worked with researchers to discover better treatment, prevention, and cures for brain diseases and disorders. Imagine life without brain disease. Learn more at AmericanBrainFoundation.org. Rethreaded offers hope and a fresh start to survivors of human trafficking right here in Jacksonville. None of us should be defined by the worst things that happen to us. Learn more about how you can unlock the potential of survivors at Rethreaded.com. And by Neurelis, a leading neuroscience company focused on the development and commercialization of therapeutics for the treatment of epilepsy and other neurologic disorders. The company's unique drug portfolios strive to address unmet needs in patient care. Learn more at Neurelis.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joe Servin, a practicing neurologist at Mayo Clinic and professor of healthcare science and policy at Arizona State University. This is What's Health Got to Do with It, which looks at where and how healthcare intersects with your life, helping you get the medical answers you want. Coming up, dads need their sleep, and we tell you why. Then, dad needs to eat, so we're cooking with dad as well. But first, as you can get from our theme, happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. I am blessed in that I had an amazing father, strong, stalwart, and endlessly helping others. His life seemed cinematic. Cuban-born, American-educated, 6 kids, losing one in Cuba, and then shepherded not only our family, but my mother's family to the U.S. To make it all work, he held 3 jobs and made sure all were well-educated and had opportunities. Frankly, I don't know how he did it, but what I do know is that he had to sacrifice sleep and food to make it happen. So on this Father's Day, we tackle both of those issues. What does sleep mean to men, especially dads? Then what about cooking and nutrition with dads? But we're going to start with sleep and a recurring segment that we're premiering today that we're calling the night shift. So I want you to consider the following facts about sleep and its deprivation in men. First of all, sleep deprivation kills men's sex drives because it drives down testosterone. Men who sleep less often weigh more. Sleep deprivation messes with your head. Even one night of missed sleep can make anyone out of sorts and foggy the next day. But prolonged periods of insomnia are especially bad news, compounding conditions like depression and anxiety. Your body's immune system can weaken, and insomnia has a startling link to cancers more likely to affect men. Lack of sleep can mean a lack of fertility, with an almost 25% drop in sperm count. And chronic sleep deprivation can mean serious heart problems as well. Sleep-deprived men are at an immediate physical risk with higher accident rates than women. So if you care about men's health, and you should, because even if you aren't a guy, the chances are high that you know and care at least about one male, then you should also care about men's sleep health. This Sunday, we celebrate all the awesome fathers in our lives and families, so it's a perfect time to reflect on the health of the men we know and have known and loved. To help us talk about sleep and dads is Dr. Bryn Dredla. She is a practicing neurologist, sleep specialist at Mayo Clinic here in Jacksonville, Florida, and she joins us now. Dr. Dredla, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Dr. Servin. I'm happy to be here.
It's so good to have you here. So I'm going to ask the first question when it comes to dads and sleep, which is, what are the most common sleep challenges that new dads face?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think for any parent, prioritization of sleep is really important, especially for new dads. New dads are going to have now caregiving responsibilities to the child, partner responsibilities, and may still have work responsibilities. And so making sure to prioritize sleep in the midst of all of that, I think, is the biggest challenge for early dads. I think one thing that can help in kind of prioritizing sleep is talking to your partner, if you have one, about what's sleep like. Perhaps one of you is more of a night owl or more of a morning lark, and maybe you can divvy up childcare responsibilities in that frame so you're still able to get some sleep. But we do know right off the bat, especially in those early phases of childhood development, we're all going to be sleep deprived as a parent. And yes. So new dads especially. I think trying to prioritize sleep is really important.
I get it. Let me ask this question because it's the one that I know people ask in follow-up. So how much sleep in hours do dads really need to be at their best?
Yeah, so the duration of sleep that we need comes from a lot of different studies. And one recently showed that the average adult healthy sleep duration is about 8.5 hours. So a little longer than our normal 8-hour sleep opportunity.
That number just took me off guard. I'm like, oh, I didn't know it was higher than what I thought you were going to say.
Yep. So really trying to prioritize more of an 8 to 9 hour sleep opportunity per night is ideal rather than a 7 to 8 hour opportunity.
So here's the other question that'll come up very frequently. Can you make up missed sleep? Does napping help? Can you make it up on the weekend? Can you comment on that part of it? Because I hear so many people say that that's what they do.
Yeah, exactly. No, and I think it depends on the circumstance. So if you're our father to a newborn, you're going to have to nap. Your nighttime interruption is going to be disrupted. So you will want to nap. And power napping is great, and it can be very beneficial. It just depends on how you're sleeping at night. So if you've gotten through those early years, but you're having kind of work demands or other life demands, and only getting maybe 4 hours a night opportunity, 5 hours a night opportunity, that's not going to be enough. And over long term, that's going to cause a lot of health issues. And so you could make it up, but we can't make it up over just a 2-day period. Usually it's going to take longer of open sleep opportunity, up to a week or more, which usually our life doesn't afford us to have. And so I really encourage fathers and new dads and men in general to optimize their sleep opportunity at night. And getting that consolidated sleep is going to be most important.
Now, one of the things that I'll always smile when we go to a gathering, whether it's my family or friends, a lot of us, both men and women, but we're focusing on dads today, they seem to fall asleep on the couch right after dinner. And I'm wondering, can you explain why is it that so many of us do that?
We do see that quite a bit. And so usually, falling asleep after dinner, that could be natural. I mean, it's part of our physiological state, rest and digest, right? After we eat. But we always want to figure out, too, is it occurring midday? Is it occurring in the evening hours? It might be a sign you're not getting enough sleep. So that would be one thing, that our sleep drive is so high that we're getting too sleepy, and in the right circumstance where we're comfortable, belly's full, we're going to fall asleep. But there also has been some really interesting data about what we're eating that's important, too. So I'm glad you're following up this segment with a cooking class, because what we eat plays a big role in how sleepy we are afterwards.
Okay, do you mind if I ask on a follow-up on that, what are those things with regards to what you eat and sleep? Can you give us a sense of that?
So what we eat really matters. So there's some research going on looking at more plant-based diet or Mediterranean-based diets, showing that they have less fatigue and sleepiness after consuming those meals, as well as versus like a high fat or a high animal fat protein meal will make you sleepier. Also, the timing of eating is really important. So if I eat sporadically throughout the day or don't have a set schedule of when I'm eating, that also throws off the clock in my brain about when I get sleepy and when I'll feel most energized too. So it's timing and what I'm eating that matters.
One of the other things that often, and you kind of brought this about in your answer a moment ago when you talked about consolidating your sleep. I imagine sleep quality is huge. So what are the things that tell us that the quality of sleep that we're getting is good?
Great question. So I always tell patients, as long as you can fall asleep when you want to, wake up when you need to, and feel energized during the day, not feeling that you have to take, you know, an hour or 2 hour nap, not having to drink excessive caffeine, then you're getting good quality sleep. We shouldn't have to necessarily, you know, nap during the day multiple times or feel like we're having difficulty falling asleep or anxious about falling asleep at night. Then that means your sleep is of good quality.
What are some good tips for dads or men in general to improve their sleep quality?
Yeah, I think one thing in particular is to try to self-reflect, to think about, well, naturally, when would I get sleepy and when would I feel most awake during the day? And that kind of gives you an idea of what your underlying circadian rhythm is. And that's the rhythm that tells us when we're most awake and when we're most sleepy. A lot of times due to work, family responsibilities, we might be off of that cycle. So really thinking about, you know, what is my natural sleep and wake time, and trying to optimize that will help improve your sleep quality, as well as ensuring environmental factors are well controlled. So meaning your bedroom environment is dark, cool, quiet room with limited distractions, which can be very tricky depending on the age of your child for fathers
Sure. And to all of our listeners out there, you're listening to What's Health Got to Do With It on WJCT News 89.9. I'm Dr. Joe Servin. And if you're just joining us, it's our Father's Day show. And we're talking about sleep for dad and then cooking with dad. And we want to hear from you. If you have an idea for future shows, tag me on X or LinkedIn at Jay Servin. Dr. Dredla, one of the things that often comes up, and this is between both your partner and oneself, is you mentioned the coolness of the room. And I can tell you that there's always a slight little game of who touched the thermostat last in that will admit that happens in my own household, just to kind of go right there. Can you give us a sense, what's the optimal temp that a room should be?
Yeah, so it will be individualized.
Okay.
We do recommend, you know, basically 68 to 72 degrees is going to be usually an optimal sleep temp duration. But the good news is there's lots of devices, ways to get around that, where there's cooling sheets or split beds where, you know, you have separate mattresses almost, but it's the same bed, to put in a cooling blanket or different devices to keep your side warmer or cooler than your partner's side.
You've made a lot of peace for a lot of people with that answer right there. So if we focus on new dads or dads in general with young kids, are there some fun bedtime routines that can help dads wind down with kids and things of that sort?
Very much so. Yeah, I think one thing is, you know, as a parent, you're going to be the role model for your child's sleep behaviors too. And so ensuring a routine around their sleep will be just as important as ensuring a routine around yours. So I always recommend trying to dim the lights in the evening hours, trying to limit electronic use, and then always having a good book or a story to read to the children ahead of time, I think is important and a nice relaxing bonding moment for parent and child. And then once they're asleep, having your own relaxation time. So trying not to go back to work or not to get back on things, but to really try to reflect on what keeps you in a good mood and a good stress-free zone before getting into bed yourself.
What about bedtime snacks? That's another thing that comes up frequently in many a household. Is there, if you really want to do that, a perfect bedtime snack that helps optimize better sleep?
That's a great question. To be honest, not really.
Okay.
So really, we shouldn't be eating super close to bed. So we really recommend actually a 2 hour window of no eating before bed.
Oh.
However, yeah, if you are eating before bed, you want it to do, you know, a kind of very simple thing like almonds or walnuts, or, you know, not a very complex food or high sugar food. Ideally, we don't want a whole lot of food in our stomach, because when we sleep, our stomach changes how we digest food, and it slows down our stomach acid production. So we actually want not a whole lot of food in our stomach before going to bed.
Another question that comes up very frequently is snoring, a snoring partner, or you're the snorer and you don't realize it. What's the best way to deal with a snoring partner, or, you know, you're the guilty party? What's the best way?
Yep. Great question. So snoring is just a red flag that someone's airway is starting to narrow when they fall asleep. So when we fall asleep, all of our muscles relax. And sometimes that back part of the airway can relax to the point it's like you're breathing through a straw. Ooh. And in response, your brain and body will try to work harder to get more air in. So we'll force more air through our nose or maybe through our mouth. And so that'll vibrate those tissues. And that's what your partner's hearing when they're hearing you snore, or you're hearing your partner snore. That's what's making that noise. And so one thing in particular would be if you're really concerned, or they're starting to have symptoms of waking up a lot throughout the night, or feeling sleepy during the day, is to actually see a sleep provider about that. There's ways to treat that and to make sure it's not actual obstructive sleep apnea. But other ways would be sometimes body position, maybe making sure they're staying on their side rather than on their back, or elevating the head of the bed can be helpful as well.
Another thing that happens a lot of times, especially after dinner, is that people will either want coffee or tea, and those have caffeine. How late is too late for coffee or tea?
So I might get in trouble with this answer, but okay. We always recommend nothing after 12 noon.
Did you say noon?
Noon, yes. Noon time. Yep. So caffeine blocks a molecule called adenosine, and that's what builds up to make us sleepy. And so if I'm blocking that, we have variable times where we metabolize it. So it could be up to 6 hours, up to 12 hours after drinking it, that it's still in our system affecting that. And so I always recommend decaf. So, you know, decaf coffee or decaf tea, or try to do some other hot beverage if that's kind of the habit you've associated it with in the evening hours, but really trying to limit any caffeine after 12 noon.
How does exercise affect sleep quality? Are workouts at night a good thing versus the day in terms of sleep, improving sleep or optimizing it?
Yeah. So exercise, you might have read, you know, you're not supposed to exercise really close to bedtime, which ideally is true because it's going to elevate our body temperature. And that's why we want a cold room, is our body temperature starts to kind of go down. And so we don't want too high of a body temperature. It'll keep us awake. However, most of the recent data has shown as long as we exercise, it greatly improves our sleep. So I always encourage every person to exercise regardless of time of day, wherever you can fit it in regards to prioritization, is important because it'll improve your sleep quality.
What about things such as sleep apps or technology that we can use that help us sleep better? Are there any things that come to mind that, you know, maybe we should know about or should think about in terms of helping to improve it, or however you would approach that question?
Yeah, there's a lot out there. In fact, it's one of the biggest areas of consumer wearable devices are sleep oriented. So there's a lot on the market nowadays. I think any app is very helpful, at least giving you an idea of how you're sleeping and sort of your quality of sleep if you're concerned about that. There's not one specific, you know, device that's going to necessarily improve sleep quality. The question is, well, why am I having poor quality to begin with? And that's where, you know, seeing a sleep provider can be beneficial. And again, getting back to your sleep environment. So if there is, you know, maybe an app or a noise canceling thing or something that makes your sleep environment more conducive to be dark, quiet, and cool, those can be beneficial.
One of the big things in our age is that we're just surrounded in stress. And you know, we do many a show about anxiety levels and things of that sort. Any good suggestions or advice in terms of how to de-stress prior to sleep, or is there anything we can do to kind of get us there?
Great question. So I always think it's wonderful to have what we call a sleep buffer time, meaning at least 30 minutes, ideally an hour if you have it, of kind of doing a whole lot of nothing. So meaning, you know, not looking at electronic devices, not doing work, not doing, you know, really intensive conversations with your spouse or children at that time, but trying to do something that you find relaxing. So really self-reflecting, whether it's meditating, whether it's reading, whether it's going for a walk, relaxing, whatever that might be for you, kind of having an outlet to de-stress. So you're not taking all of that mental burden with you to bed. Another one is there's something called constructive worry, which is an exercise I teach my patients to write down sort of your thoughts or worriments or things that might pop up in the middle of the night that you contemplate and think about on one side of a sheet of paper, and then sort of your thoughts, emotions, ideas on the other side, fold it up and take it to bed with you. So if it does pop up in the middle of the night, you can read it, look at it, think, I already dealt with this, and sort of quiet the mind down a little quicker in the middle of the night too.
And what a clever idea. I'm going to have to give that one a try. Dr. Dredla, are there any sleep myths that are kind of more related to men or fathers in general that you would like to just debunk right here and now?
Yes, great question. I think the two biggest sleep myths is you snooze, you lose, that I see, especially, you know, in men or, you know, depending on what your work schedule is or life requirements. And really, that's a huge myth. We know that, as you mentioned, sleep deprivation actually shortens one's life. It causes a lot of cognitive issues the next day. So even though I might have slept less hours, I'm actually slower at my work, harder to concentrate, less efficient. And sleeping perhaps that extra 1 to 2 hours per night may actually make you way more efficient, way more present that next day to improve your outcome that you're looking for.
Is there an interesting or kind of curious sleep fact that most dads might not know in general?
Yeah, great question. I think, like you mentioned earlier, the sleep deprivation in men's health is huge. And that specifically to men, it changes, like you mentioned, testosterone level. Untreated obstructive sleep apnea can lead to erectile dysfunction, as well as it can contribute to having to urinate a lot at night. A lot of times men blame, oh, prostate, but not necessarily. Sometimes it can be actually due to untreated sleep apnea. It can make you urinate frequently at night as well. So those are kind of two big maybe myths out there or perceptions that think that's pretty normal. Not necessarily. There's things you can do about that to get that corrected.
Dr. Dredla, in our last moment, I want to kind of let you have this opportunity to basically offer any insights or wisdom to, in this case, not just the dads and men out there, but everybody out there when it comes to sleep. What kind of advice do you want to make sure that you want to impart to them that maybe they haven't thought about?
Yeah, I think most definitely is sleep is a priority for your health, meaning we have to eat to survive, we have to sleep to survive. And so really prioritizing your sleep and not taking it for granted and making sure that you're giving yourself that opportunity, because if we get a good night's rest, we know how great we feel the next day. And so if you can replicate that over and over, that will greatly improve your mental and physical health.
Dr. Dredla, I want to thank you so much for giving us your time today. This has been terrific. We really appreciate all your insights.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We've been talking to Dr. Bryn Dredla. She is a practicing neurologist. She's a sleep specialist at Mayo Clinic in Florida, and she's been giving us tips about sleep for dads and men alike. And up next, our weekly health headlines. And we'll be right back.
I bet you're singing proud. Oh, I bet you're full of crowd. Gonna be a long night. It's gonna be alright. On the night shift. On the night shift. You found another home. I know you're not alone. On the night shift.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Joe Servin, and this is What's Health Got to Do With It. These are your weekly health headlines. In a groundbreaking move, the FDA has approved Moderna's mRNA-based vaccine to combat RSV in adults over 60. This is the first use of mRNA technology for a disease other than COVID-19, marking a significant step in vaccine innovation. Following in the footsteps of GSK and Pfizer, who received approval for their RSV vaccines last year, Moderna's advancement brings new hope in protecting the elderly from this respiratory virus. Tragically, about 1.5 million Medline Industries bed rails have been recalled across the U.S. and Canada after two elderly individuals suffocated. These devices, intended to prevent falls, have been linked to numerous injuries and deaths, highlighting the importance of stringent safety standards for medical equipment. During the pandemic, carbon dioxide monitors became essential tools to gauge indoor air quality and potential COVID exposure. Now, new research reveals that high CO2 levels also enhance virus survival in the air, revolutionizing our understanding of indoor pathogen transmission and emphasizing the need for well-ventilated spaces. In a heated debate, an FDA advisory committee has cast doubt on the effectiveness of MDMA-assisted therapy for post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, while promising, the therapy's data's inconsistencies and potential for abuse have raised concerns, posing a challenge for what could have been the first psychedelic treatment approved by the agency. A new strategy in the fight against sexually transmitted infections is emerging, using the antibiotic doxycycline as a morning-after pill. Known as DoxyPep, this treatment could significantly reduce infections like syphilis, gonorrhea, and chlamydia. However, there are fears it could contribute to antibiotic resistance, prompting the CDC to develop guidelines for its use. As the pandemic's impact on health continues to unfold, a rise in aggressive late-stage cancers has doctors questioning if COVID might be to blame. Though some suggest healthcare disruptions are the cause, others speculate that the virus's inflammatory effects could exacerbate cancer growth, urging further research into this alarming trend. Finally, a recent discovery has unearthed evidence that ancient Egyptians attempted brain cancer surgery 4,600 years ago. Scientists found surgical marks on a skull with metastasized brain cancer, suggesting early medical efforts to treat the disease. This revelation extends the history of cancer treatment by a millennium, showcasing the ancient roots of medical innovation. Those are your weekly health headlines. On Father's Day, many of us take advantage of grilling or cooking for or with your dad. We have a registered dietitian to help guide us on how to do this healthily and to give us tips on the best way to keep men and dads healthy nutritionally all year long. Joining us now is Jenny Hamm. She is a registered dietitian here in Jacksonville, Florida at HCA Florida Memorial Hospital. Jenny, welcome back to our show.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Well, I'm gonna dive right into this, and maybe because I'm hungry and I just am dying to hear your advice here. But what are some? Let's start on the beginning of the day. What are some dad-friendly, quick breakfast ideas that are also nutritious without, like, you know, we're going to do the whipped creamed waffles and maple bacon. God, that all sounds good. But but nonetheless, yeah. What are maybe some better dad-friendly breakfast ideas?
Yeah, the breakfast can definitely go healthy, not so healthy, depending on how you want to do it. Exactly. And it's going to vary depending on the preference of, you know, are we preferring a more savory breakfast versus a more sweet? So if we're liking the eggs, omelets.
Sure.
A frittata. A breakfast burrito. That's a great way to add in some vegetables. And, you know, certainly with a frittata or a breakfast burrito, you can actually prepare that ahead of time. So if you're looking for something quick, don't have as much time in the morning, you can prepare that ahead of time, put it in the freezer, put it in the fridge. So that's a great way to add in some vegetables. If you like more of the breakfast meats, the bacon, the sausage, maybe looking for a leaner option, turkey bacon, chicken sausage. No, it's not quite the same flavor, but we're going to prioritize health here. That could be a good option. Also, the problem with breakfast meats, it tends to be a little higher sodium. Okay. So you can always look for a lower sodium or uncured nitrate-free option. If you like more of the sweeter flavors, yeah, like cereals, yeah, you know, something like an oatmeal or yogurt parfait could be a good option. If you're adding your own flavorings like fruit, cinnamon, nutmeg, you can add protein with nut butters or chopped nuts. Certainly with the waffles or pancakes, it can be a little more difficult, but you can always use a whole grain flour, whole wheat flour, if you're making your own as another option.
I guess that's going to be one of my quick questions there. Because bread is such a great part on the breakfast part, whether toast or not, is the secret simply whole grain?
Certainly whole grain will be higher fiber. So that's the benefit. Your white bread, the more refined grains, just tend to lack a lot of fiber, lack a lot of vitamins and minerals. They're still both carbohydrates, but there's still going to be a benefit of higher fiber. It helps to avoid those high sugar spikes and drops, so it can be a lot better for your body in the long run.
You mentioned already a great idea about how to get vegetables involved in breakfast. I'd use it in omelets, and I think that's brilliant as someone who loves to make them and eat them, sadly. Are there other ways to incorporate vegetables into other parts of the meal of the day, if you will, that it could be fun or at least enjoyable, if you will?
Right. Yeah. The, you know, may not necessarily be quote unquote fun, depends on your definition of fun, but there are definitely ways to vary up vegetables, maybe incorporate them in different things. Yeah, certainly an omelet or a frittata or something like that is a great option. I think it's also just finding different ways to prepare vegetables. A lot of us grew up with boiled, microwaved, lacking a lot of flavor, so that can make them less exciting. So you can always try adding different spices, different flavors, you know, lemon juice, zest, Parmesan cheese, panko breadcrumbs, prepare it in different ways, roast, air fry, grill, or pan fry. If you do like to grill, veggie kebabs could be a fun thing to do. That gives you a little variety of vegetables with onions, peppers, tomatoes, mushrooms. So things like that could be a different thing. If you really don't like vegetables by themselves, you could always try, again, mixing it into a dish, mix it into a spaghetti sauce, a soup, another baked dish could be another option for incorporating those veggies.
I love that. Now, you just mentioned veggie kebabs for the grill. Mm-hmm. Grilling is a big part of Father's Day because it's the beginning of summer, and people out there on barbecues as a way to kind of have these celebrations. Is there a way to make grilling healthier? Or maybe how do you make grilling healthier?
Yeah, so grilling in general can be a very healthy cooking method because you're not deep frying where you're adding saturated fats, and it's the way it cooks, you're cooking a lot of that fat off of your meat. So that can be a real advantage. I think it depends on what you're cooking, how you're cooking it. Some of the concerns, you know, with grilling and overall health is, you know, some of the compounds that are created when you're charring or grilling meal or grilling meats. There have been some links with increased cancer risk. The evidence is limited on that, but, you know, certainly you can try microwaving the meat briefly ahead of time so you don't have to cook it as long on the grill, or flip it often so it's not spending as much time on one side, removing those charred portions. But also, again, you know, yeah, you mentioned the veggie kebabs, the grilling veggies, tofu, plant-based proteins. You know, those are some different options you could cook. You know, so certainly trying those. You could always try a smokeless grill, certainly if there's a concern with like smoke exposure. It's not quite as tasty. You don't get that smoky flavor, but, you know, certainly it could be a healthy way of grilling. And, you know, also just being cognizant of like what you're putting on the meats. Obviously, if you're having a lot of barbecue sauce, that can be a lot of sugar. So maybe put that sauce on the side or just try to use a little bit less, you know, to kind of even it out a little more.
I love it. Well, one of the big issues that happens at any type of grilling or celebrations is, especially on Father's Day or Mother's Day, but we'll focus on Father's Day, is I want to try a little bit of this. I want to try a little of that. And then suddenly I have 2 plates full of food, and that's probably not the best thing. Can you talk a little bit about portion control and how we manage it so that you enjoy it, but you're doing it in the right way?
Yeah, that is definitely a tricky part. Portion control can be, you know, a big part of health, and we certainly have a problem with that in America. Our portions are definitely oversized most of the time. But I feel like it's, you know, obviously being cognizant about how much you're eating. I think you can still enjoy those foods that you really love without going overboard. So you could always try, if you're focusing on portioning, you know, using a smaller plate, like a salad size plate instead of a regular size plate. You know, obviously avoiding doing things buffet style where you're bringing larger portions of food to the table. It just makes opportunities to go back for seconds. You know, so preparing that plate in the kitchen, so that can help a lot. Certainly with, you know, if you're eating out that day, you know, maybe you put half of your meal in a box to go for later. So that could be a good opportunity. And I think just having variety on your plate. So, you know, maybe you just pair, you know, that dish, you have your burger, or you have your steak, add in like a fruit or vegetable. Maybe you get a small, if you're loving steak, you know, get a smaller steak instead of the larger portion steak. But it really just depends. I mean, if it's a special occasion, you know, maybe you just want to really enjoy that day. So it's kind of your preference, but certainly having that balance between the various nutrients on your plate can help.
Let me get into just day-to-day life. And again, focusing on men, dads, and folks like that. A lot of times, so we're busy in our lives, and you get home and you're like, I really don't want to cook. Can you kind of tell us the difference from a nutrition, health-wise, dining out, taking home food that's from cooked elsewhere versus cooking something at home? Benefits, risks.
Yeah, that's a tough one. The convenience of eating out is you don't have to shop, you don't have to prep your food, right. You don't have to clean up. Gosh, that's just amazing.
Exactly.
Takes so much of the work out of it. But despite that, there are a lot of benefits to cooking at home, even with the extra work. You have a lot of healthier food options when you're eating at home. You know, wherever you're going out, it's going to be really limited to those healthier options. You can still make it work, but you're going to be obviously limited, and you have a little less control over what's going into your food and, you know, knowing everything that's in there. Also, saving a lot of money. You save a lot of money when you cook at home.
Prices are high these days.
It really is. Eating out is so expensive. And especially if you've got multiple mouths to feed, it really adds up. So that's a huge benefit. Also, you can, when you cook at home, prep for multiple meals. So maybe you can double or triple the portions that you're making, and you can have meals for a few nights or have leftovers for lunch the next day, so your food can go a longer way. I feel like it also allows kids to be involved in the preparation or process of making the food if the parents so choose. That can be a huge benefit in helping to reduce picky eating. You know, research has just shown that when kids are involved with making the food, when they see where it's coming from, that whole process can actually help them to eat a lot better as well.
And to all of our listeners out there, you're listening to What's Health Got to Do with It on WJCT News 89.9. I'm Dr. Joe Servin, and we're talking with Jenny Hamm about nutrition for dads and men overall. And if you have ideas for future shows, tag me on X or LinkedIn. Let's get into the issue of like one of the big points of Father's Day and Mother's Day is the chance to commune with your kids and family members and things of that sort. What are kind of fun ways that dad and kids can get together to make something that maybe isn't the s'more or the Rice Krispie treat, but a maybe a more nutritious, easy recipe that you might recommend?
I know. Those things are so fun.
Yeah, but they are. And delicious.
Delicious. And should be incorporated. But yes, I think there's a lot of ways that kids can be involved in the preparation process of most meals, even those healthier options. This is really going to vary depending on the age of those kids. But, you know, there's still a lot of great opportunities. So, for example, if your kids are really young, they can help chop some veggies with some kid-safe knives, transfer food to a pan that's not hot, stirring or mixing something, measuring out some spices, pouring water into a pot. Obviously, if your kids are older, they can help with a lot more, and you can teach them to do more advanced or more cooking methods. Some simple recipes they might be able to easily be involved in, especially if they're younger, are something like a taco, a burrito, a burrito bowl. That can allow them to kind of assemble, pick what they want to add, get all those fun toppings. Makes it really fun for the kids. Homemade pizza. I know always the most healthy thing, but they can roll out the dough, spread the sauce, add toppings. And if you've got a lot of like toppings that are more veggie-based or a little more healthy, that can add some nutrition. Certainly, again, an omelet, we talked about that earlier, chopping up the veggies, cracking, mixing the eggs before cooking. Also, a yogurt parfait. They can scoop some yogurt, put their little toppings on. So there's lots of little healthier recipes that are simpler that kids can be involved with as well.
I love those ideas. Let me kind of jump on when you mentioned the parfait. A lot of times, dads, men, we all have sweet tooth cravings. Any suggestions on a healthy way to satisfy that craving?
Yes. So certainly this time of year, fruit is very much in season. It's a natural sweetness. That's great to gravitate towards if you've got a sweet tooth. So if you want to make some desserts, something like a homemade frozen fruit or yogurt popsicle could be a great option. Mm. You blend some frozen fruit into a blender and pour it into a popsicle mold. If you like chocolate, dark chocolate is going to be a much healthier option. Yeah. It's lower in sugar. It's got more cocoa, and it has the benefit of flavonoids, which are very good for your health. Yes, we mentioned the yogurt parfait, another great option. One easy recipe I always recommend is chocolate-covered frozen bananas. Freezing some banana, freezing some banana slices or chunks, rolling it in some melted dark chocolate, sprinkling some chopped nuts, and just has a lot of great health, but also gives you that sweet too. So finding those little avenues where you can still get that sweet flavoring without too much added sugar.
That is terrific. Let me ask a very specific kind of gender-related question when it comes to men. Are there specific superfoods or things that guys should be incorporating into their diet that's more towards men and men's health? Overall, is there?
You know, with superfoods, you know, there's going to be no single food that provides all your nourishment and all the energy that you need. Ones that I commonly recommend, you know, for men, but also for all people, berries are a really great one. Very high in antioxidants, which really help fight diseases, which is going to be great for men's immune system. And they're very much in season this time of year.
And we're talking about any berry.
Yes, any berry.
Strawberry, blueberry, blackberry, raspberry.
They're all great.
Okay.
Load up on the berries.
Okay, you gave me a great idea from that direction. One of the other things that happens in summer is that it's hot and we are sweating like crazy. So talk a little bit about hydration and its role in daily diet for dads and men and everyone for that matter.
Yeah, hydration is super important. Our bodies are made up of about 60% of water, and we have to replenish that water daily because we're constantly excreting it. And water plays a lot of roles with transportation and absorption of nutrients, removing waste from your body. So the recommended water intake is going to vary a little bit by body size, activity level, the age, outside temperatures, obviously here in Florida, it's really, really hot. So we may need some more water. But the National Academy of Medicine recommends approximately 13 cups of overall fluid per day.
What is that? 13 cups. What is that? We're talking about like coffee cups?
Like 8 ounce cups.
13 of them.
13, yes.
Wow.
Now, that would be water including other beverages. It does not have to be strict water. However, it is recommended that majority of your fluid intake be from water, but it can be from other things like tea or coffee or other beverages. We assume that 20% of your water intake will come from water-rich foods like fruits and vegetables, but yes, around 13 cups a day. And it may be more over the summertime because you're going to be sweating and excreting a lot more water on a daily basis.
That is a lot. One of the things that I often am asked, and I'm always looking for an answer for, around two or three, you feel that little kind of, oh, God, I can take a nap. I want to go to sleep. Is there a specific food that helps to boost your energy level other than caffeine and coffee?
Sure. Certainly, foods that can boost energy are rich in complex carbohydrates. That's probably going to be your best go-to. These complex carbohydrates, such as fruits or maybe a starchy vegetable like peas, beans, potatoes, whole grains, they're going to be much more rich in carbohydrates, which give you that readily available energy, but they're high in fiber. So again, they don't cause that huge sugar spike and then drop. So they're giving you that energy, but, you know, giving that steady energy that's not going to cause a slump in the later in the afternoon. So that's, you know, usually a good go-to. I wouldn't say there's a single specific food. Foods that are rich in vitamin B12 can help as well.
Like meats.
Seafood, poultry, eggs are going to be good sources of B12 that you could gravitate towards. So, but I think just having a mix of nutrients during the day, if you're balancing well with carbohydrates, proteins, fats throughout your day, then that's going to give you the energy when your body gets the nutrients it needs.
No matter where I go or who I dine with, it seems everyone's on a diet. And so I guess my question is, what are tips for dads, men, trying to lose weight without feeling deprived? Like I can't do this anymore.
Right. Well, following a fad diet like Atkins or, you know, a paleo diet may not be the best avenue because a lot of these fad diets tend to cut out whole food groups where, you know, you're left with very little left to eat. So I think finding simple ways that you can adjust or change your eating habits, but without making huge restrictions, because long term, that's not sustainable. That's where people tend to fall off. They can do it for a few weeks, but then it's just not long term able to be kept up with. So, and it's really not good for your body either. So I think finding those simple ways where you're making small changes to the meals that you're cooking. So maybe you cook your meat in a different way, you're grilling, you're baking, you're broiling, you're sauteing instead of deep frying. Maybe you're adding a fruit or vegetable to the meal. Maybe those foods that are higher in fat or refined carbohydrates, make those a side dish instead of the main course. If you're trying to cut down on sugary beverages, maybe you reduce the number that you drink per week or per day, not cutting it out completely unless you absolutely need to do that. Or you cut down on the amount of sugar that you're adding to tea or coffee. So some simple things like that, when you make those small, steady changes, that's going to allow you to keep up with it long term and avoid that drop off with feeling too deprived and not being able to sustain it long term.
Understood. I'm curious, as a dietitian, what favorite go-to healthy recipe do you go to when you, I have no idea what to make, what to do, that's a hit with your family, but you know you're doing your job as as a dietitian and making sure that it's healthy and nutritious?
Absolutely. I would say tacos.
Okay. It's not too Taco Tuesday, but I'll take
no.
it. So what's the secret there?
Yeah. So I really just prioritize healthier ingredients. It's not just the ground meat and cheese. We air fry some chicken that's coated in like a really good taco seasoning. Oh. We add stuff like roasted sweet potatoes. We add veggies like Brussels sprouts or fajita veggies, guacamole, salsa, leafy greens. So there's just a lot of good ingredients, but it's still the fun thing of being a taco, and it tastes really, really good. And myself, my husband, and my three-year-old all absolutely love it.
Love it. Jenny, I want to thank you for giving us your time today. This has been wonderful. I now can celebrate Father's Day without a guilty conscience. This has been wonderful. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been great to be here. Thank you for having me.
We've been talking to Jenny Hamm. She is a registered dietitian at HCA Florida Memorial Hospital, and she's been giving us tips for healthy Father's Day dietary celebrations and men's nutrition overall. Well, that's our program for today. We hope you've enjoyed our show. If you missed anything, you can listen to the full episode at WJCT.org and on your favorite podcast app. Thanks to all of our guests. Our executive producer is David Luckin. Stacey Bennett is our producer. Brady Corum is our director. Jamie Vallee is our associate producer. Next week's program is an update on Alzheimer's disease, and our caregiver journey continues. If you have questions about this or any topic, let us know by calling us at 904-358-6362, email us at health@wjct.org, or tweet me at jservin. I'm Dr. Joe Servin, and you're listening to What's Health Got to Do With It on WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville. Thank you for listening. Happy Father's Day. And stay in touch.
Sponsored in part by Eli Lilly and Company. Is migraine impacting your life or daily activities 4 or more days per month? If so, ask your healthcare professional if you are a candidate for migraine prevention treatments and which ones might be best for you. Learn more at thinkmigraine.com. The American Brain Foundation. For over 30 years, the foundation has worked with researchers to discover better treatment, prevention, and cures for brain diseases and disorders. Imagine life without brain disease. Learn more at AmericanBrainFoundation.org. And ReThreaded restores choice and breaks the cycle of generational trauma for survivors of human trafficking in Jacksonville, Florida, through business. You can help. Learn more about ReThreaded survivor-created goods at the storefront or ReThreaded.com/shop.